I'm Gabrielle Jackson, and this is The Full Story.
Ina mana, ina reo, ina tangata whenua o Aotearoa, e tika ana te kōrero. E hara taku toa e te toa takitahi, he toa takitini kē.
On Saturday, Jacinda Ardern's Labour Party won the New Zealand general election in a landslide. It was the Labour Party's strongest vote in half a century.
Tonight, New Zealand has shown the Labour Party its greatest support in at least 50 years.
Today, how did Jacinda Ardern pull off such an historic election win? It's Thursday, the 22nd of October.
I only have two simple words. Thank you.
Morning, Ellie. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, nice to be with you.
When Jacinda Ardern was appointed leader of the Labour Party just 7 weeks before the general election in 2017, no one expected her to win. Can you just take us back to that time and remind us how she ended up in that job?
Sure. It was a very exciting time for New Zealand politics.
Eleanor Ainsroy is The Guardian's New Zealand correspondent.
We begin with Labour and Andrew Little. The man himself joins us after six. But he and the party must now grapple with another disastrously poor poll result.
So the leader of the Labour Party before Jacinda Ardern was an older Pakeha man, and he didn't excite anybody. And it was looking like he was going to lose spectacularly to the National Party.
As we know, Labour has recorded its lowest ever result in the One News Colmar Brunton poll at 24%, and it's been revealed today that the party's latest internal polling is even worse, down a further point at 23%.
So he went to his deputy, who was Jacinda Ardern, and essentially begged her to take over the leadership role.
Begged?
Yeah, he did. That's how she described it. Yes, he asked her seven times.
So why didn't she want the job then?
Well, she used to work under former Prime Minister Helen Clark, Labour Prime Minister, and she was a staffer in her office, and she saw the mammoth hours that Helen Clark put in. And Jacinda has always been very clear about wanting to have a family. She thought that if she was Prime Minister, she wouldn't be able to have a family. So she ruled it out quite a long time ago. She always wanted to stay in politics. She wanted to improve the lives of New Zealand children, but she really wanted a family, and she didn't think the two were possible together. And she kept saying no repeatedly until eventually she gave in.
2 months ahead of a general election, the opposition Labour Party in New Zealand has its youngest ever leader. Former party boss Andrew Little, faced with his party's slumping poll numbers, has fallen on his sword to let his deputy, Jacinda Ardern.
He has been with the Labour Party since she was 17 years old. She's invested in the Labour Party. She wanted them to get into government. And everyone around her thought that she was the best chance.
And she polls strongly among the young and women, but the sometime DJ and former Mormon is seen by some as inexperienced.
You know, granted, I am a young proposition for the party, but this team has worked alongside me for 9 years. They have faith in me, and I absolutely believe I'm up to the job.
So Jacinda Ardern went on to win the 2017 general election. You say she always wanted to have a family. How did that play out as Prime Minister?
Yeah, she'd been leader for actually one day. She'd just been elected, and she went on the AM show on TV3.
If you're an employer of a company, you need to know that type of thing from the women that you're employing.
No.
Legally, you have to give them maternity leave. So therefore the question is it okay for a PM to take maternity leave while in office?
One of the commentators, who is a right-leaning former sportsman, asked her what her family plans were and said that New Zealanders were entitled to know what her family plans were because that might rule her out as PM. And she went for him.
Okay, elephant in the room is Mark Richardson. What do you want to say to him? Because we've talked about this morning, haven't we? This, you know, can you do this job? Do you want kids? What about this whole question about, you know, work and babies and families? I find this an inappropriate question.
For me, no, because I opened myself up to it.
It was spectacular television.
but you. For other women, it is totally unacceptable in 2017 to say that women should have to answer that question in the workplace.
But this is my point. Unacceptable. No, I'm going to count that.
No, it is unacceptable in 2017. It is a woman's decision about when they choose to have children. It should not...
So she was very staunch on that. But what we didn't know at the same time, the other reason she didn't want the job was that she was trying for a family throughout that whole campaign. So she had a lot going on.
Well, this is normal.
And she did actually end up having a baby in office after all, didn't she?
Clark and I are really excited to share, as you already know, that in June we're looking forward to welcoming our first child.
We did. And I mean, you know, when she was elected to be Prime Minister, she was already pregnant with her first child. She said it was a complete surprise because her and her partner had to undergo, we're about to start IVF.
You know, the New Zealand public pretty much knew our hopes. We didn't know for sure if it would ever be a reality for us, but we'd like to think we'd always been open about our plans for the future.
And she went into negotiation with the coalition partners when she was experiencing fairly severe morning sickness. And there's quite a famous photograph of her now walking to meet Winston Peters for a negotiation, carrying a packet of ginger nut biscuits, which she needed to quell the nausea.
I'm sure many women would relate to that.
They absolutely did. And I think a lot of people also just admired her her guts. You know, she was able to hold these incredibly high-level negotiations and manage feeling personally unwell and the prospect of a pregnancy. She had a huge amount going on. But she handled it, I think, as she said at the time, people said, how did you manage all these things at once? And she said, I'm a lady, slightly ironically, but it was pretty incredible what she did. But the way she dealt with it too, you know, she made the announcement with her partner, but after that, she didn't want to talk about it. And she hated taking questions on it in press conferences.
I think, you know... I was very aware that even when I announced that I was having Neve, that there was the sense that I needed to prove that it was somehow possible for women to do everything. And I've always been open about saying that actually I can't. I can't physically do the job of being Prime Minister and mother by myself. And so I constantly talk about the fact that we should not expect women to be superhuman.
She really just wanted to get on with the job, and she really wanted to portray motherhood and portray pregnancy as something that is just a part of life. It doesn't have to be something that's so fussed over by employers. You can just get on with it. That was her attitude.
And so I do what I do because I have the support and help and co-parenting of my partner, Clark. That's how I do what I do. I'm not a superwoman, and we shouldn't pretend that we are. That does a disservice to all women. It raises expectations that no one can meet.
She became quite quickly a hugely popular global figure. And I think that this momentous event of having a baby in office and still doing her job so well was partly one of the reasons. Can you just remind us of some of the other moments that made her such an engaging global figure?
Sure. Well, I think, if we're talking about early on when she was an unknown and then she morphed into this global superstar, there were a couple of things about her personally that really appealed. She was young. She was only 37. She was completely untested. She hadn't held any government roles, any senior ministerial positions whatsoever. She's a very lively person. She's very animated. She's got a fantastic communication style. You know, it's frank and it's warm and she's very empathetic. Her preferred way of greeting people is to give them a hug. So she was a real contrast to what we usually see in politics, and that really appealed. And she also, you know, the things she was talking about were really shaking up society. She wasn't promising same old, same old. She promised transformational change. She wanted to change people's lives. She wanted to get them into homes. She wanted to tackle climate change. She wanted to eradicate child poverty. And that really excited people.
There were a couple of photographs that really captured how different this leader was.
For a self-confessed Republican, Jacinda Ardern has had quite a brush with royalty, having a private meeting with the Queen at Buckingham Palace in that magnificent cutaway.
I remember an image of her at Buckingham Palace. Can you remind us about that?
Yes, it's a stunning image, iconic images of her leadership. So she was at Buckingham Palace and she was wearing a beautiful sort of orangey mustard silk dress, full length, and draped over her shoulders was a korowai, which is a Maori cloak, and it's usually only worn by Maori leaders. And so she was gifted that by the local iwi tribe in London, and it was adorned with feathers, kiwi feathers and feathers from other birds. It was fantastic. It was regal. She looked powerful. She was pregnant. She looked in command. It was just a new image of a new age and a totally different type of leadership. And that, you know, that sort of that beauty and femininity could also be balanced with power and being in charge.
In New Zealand, there is a Māori proverb, he aha te mea nui o te ao. What is the most important thing in the world? He tangata, he tangata, he tangata. It is the people, the people, the people. As we head back to our respective countries, may we all remember that our actions this week serve our people. Through the Commonwealth, we must continue to help improve the lives for all of our citizens. May I invite you all to join me in a toast to the Commonwealth, towards a common future.
How did New Zealanders respond to all this global coverage?
Yeah, so in the sort of first few months of her leadership, especially after she announced her pregnancy, she did a huge amount of international media. And the peak of that was probably Vogue, and there was a stunning cover shot of her on a beach and wind blowing, and she looked fantastic. But it was at this point when she appeared on the cover of Vogue that there started to be a bit of a backlash against her. People started calling her a celebrity prime minister and saying that she had style over substance, basically insinuating that she wasn't quite up to the mustard and was more interested in being a figurehead than truly leading. And actually now, I mean, it's a few years later now, she did continue to do a lot of international press, but in the last year, her press team have really cut down her international appearances because she was getting a lot of criticism from New Zealanders.
There was some criticism that she was more popular overseas than she was in New Zealand. What else was behind that?
I mean, I think there had been some significant problems with the first term of her leadership. To set it up, she was in a coalition agreement with New Zealand First, which is a sort of centre-right but even more right minor party. And Winston Peters was her deputy prime minister. So a lot of the things she wanted to do, she was unable to do because she couldn't get consensus from her party. So one thing she went into the last election was saying she wanted to introduce a capital gains tax. She was never able to get that across the line, and that really disappointed her supporters. She also promised to build 100,000 affordable homes under the Kiwi Build scheme. In the first year of that scheme, only a couple of hundred were built. So those were really embarrassing mistakes, big mistakes. And it was a slight problem with the campaign that she led. She promised transformational change, huge change. Society would be different. Society would be fair. New Zealand would be a better place to live. And those sorts of changes, you know, are going to take multiple terms, if not decades. Mm. And so the hopes and ambitions were so high for her that she was bound to disappoint. And that is what happened in her first term.
And there was a bit of a Me Too scandal, if I remember correctly.
There was. A Labor staffer who was accused by a young woman, might have been two women as well, of sexual harassment, sexual assault.
A Labor volunteer claims the party swept accusations of sexual assault under the rug.
The Prime Minister says she's deeply concerned and incredibly frustrated by the way the Labor Party has handled allegations against a staffer.
And even though Jacinda is a Me Too icon, her response was very muted, very careful, very cautious.
The person that's alleged or referenced in the article has not been on the precinct since the day after these issues arose, so I believe for roughly 5 weeks now.
And he was allowed to stay on for a number of weeks before any action was taken.
I want to make it very clear that I am deeply concerned and incredibly frustrated by the process that is being undertaken by the Labor Party, but also obviously by the nature of the allegations. I was informed in the very beginning that the allegations made were not sexual in nature.
So that was very disappointing for her base.
Next, the challenges that lay ahead for Ardern and the Labor Party. So, what did she achieve in her first term?
Well, she did have some wins throughout her term, some significant wins, actually. She increased paid parental leave. She introduced paid leave for victims of domestic violence, so they can now have 10 days off to move house, you know, get away from their abuser or their attacker. She made the first year of university free for tertiary students. She increased the benefit rate for the country's most deprived, not by much, but it was still a slight increase. And she also introduced a winter energy payment for older New Zealanders who couldn't afford power. She had a pretty interesting term. I mean, you could certainly wasn't quiet.
Assalamu alaikum. On a quiet Friday afternoon, a man stormed into a place of peaceful worship and took away the lives of 50 people.
A few months later, there was a terrible terrorist attack in Christchurch when 52 people were gunned down at two inner-city mosques.
That quiet Friday afternoon has become our darkest of days.
Her response to that was perfect, essentially. Nobody has been able to fault her. She flew down the next day. She wore a headscarf. She was empathetic. She was kind. And she immediately said, "They are us.
We cannot know your grief, but we can walk with you at every stage. We can and we will surround you with aroha, manaakitanga, and all that makes us us."
That became the sort of slogan of her response. And what she was saying there was that these aren't a separate group. These people aren't different from us. These are New Zealanders and they need our love. And this attack is on New Zealand and our society. So it really brought the community together. And she completely ignored the gunman, the Australian, and she refused to say his name.
He sought many things from his act of terror, but one was notoriety. And that is why you will never hear me mention his name.
And by doing that, she refused him that fame that he sought. Mm. And all of the emphasis, all of the attention was on the victims. So it was a very gracious, very loving response. And the community, the Muslim community in Christchurch and more broadly in New Zealand, have adoration for the way that she behaved. And there are pictures of it, wrapped her arms around them with all the love that was possible for her to give.
Our hearts are heavy, but our spirit is strong. We wish for every member of our communities to also feel safe.
Such a different image to what we're normally seeing from leaders, isn't it?
It is, you know, another leader might have come there strong talking, condemning the gunman, standing on a podium. That's not what Ardern did. She was right down there with the people. And then the other thing that is important to note too, that she banned semi-automatic weapons within 6 weeks of that attack. So she followed up with the empathy and the love with real legislative change.
But that wasn't the only tragedy to happen on her watch, was it? Only a few months later, there was a volcano eruption. How did she handle that?
Mr. Speaker, just after 2 p.m., White Island erupted. There were two explosions, one after the other, in quick succession.
So, yes, in December, Fakari White Island, which is a huge, beautiful volcano off the east coast of the North Island, it erupted when there were dozens of people on the volcano, including Australians, Britons, New Zealanders, you know, a lot of tourists. And it was horrific, really. Nobody knew what had happened. Nobody knew how many people exactly were there. And there was this days and days of waiting to find out if there were survivors. The government said that nobody could go onto the island because it was too dangerous. And again, Ardern came into town immediately, you know, hours after the eruption. And she dealt with the situation very calmly. She consulted experts immediately. Every press conference that she held, she would take the experts with her, and she said, I have to listen to their advice first. You know, this is who we trust. We trust the volcanologists. But in the end, some people did get off. Some chopper pilots managed to get some people off sort of in the minutes afterwards. But ultimately, 21 people died on the island.
To those who have lost or are missing family and friends, we share in your grief and sorrow, and we are devastated. To our international partners and friends, we will do everything we can to support you as you have supported us in times past.
And I guess just when New Zealanders thought things couldn't get any worse, then 2020 came around and the coronavirus hit. But she has been quite well regarded for her response to that, hasn't she?
Yes, more than well regarded, really. I mean, WHO, the World Health Organization, has repeatedly called out New Zealand as an example of what to do right. So she acted very early, while similar countries took longer to respond. But Jacinda Ardern closed the New Zealand borders in mid-March. And then 10 days later, she said to the country, we're going into complete lockdown. It was very dramatic action to take for the entire nation very quickly. But she said, I think she's threatening in the rest of the world, and she was consulting the experts, and she believed in the science, and she realised how devastating it could be for New Zealand. And she said, I'm doing this to save lives now. I know it will be difficult. You know, there were estimates that up to 40,000 people could die in New Zealand if COVID took a hold. And she wasn't willing to compromise lives.
I would jump online quickly and just check in with everyone, really, as we all prepare to hunker down for a few weeks.
And on the night before lockdown, she did a Facebook Live video, and it was a remarkable video, really.
I'll keep multitasking and reading your messages as they come up. Excuse the casual attire. It can be a messy business putting toddlers to bed, so I'm not in my work clothes, so forgive me for that.
She was in her sweats, you know, her jersey, no makeup, you know, bed hair. She'd just put her toddler down.
Now, many of you, of course, will have got the message from Civil Defence Systems this evening, the blast of the horn on your phone, and then some messages that we're really keen for everyone to stick to as we go through the next several weeks at home.
I watched it myself, you know, and it was wonderful because she said, I know this is going to be hard, but we're going to get through this. And we all need to look after each other, and we're all here. And sometimes you need that, you know. You just want somebody to tell you everything is going to be okay. And she was just trying to tell New Zealanders they will be looked after and they will be cared for.
Till then, do check in on your neighbours. Do especially check on those who may be elderly. Give them a call, see what their needs are. And if you can help them, go out and grab their essentials and pop them on the front door for them.
So that response was very intuitive, and it was also very smart because it made New Zealanders accept a very difficult lockdown more easily because they felt that it was necessary, and she was able to communicate why it was necessary and also acknowledge at the same time that it would be very difficult.
Remember, stay at home, break the chain, and you'll save lives. And it's as simple as that. That's everyone's job for the next 4 months. Okay, I'll be staying in touch, so you'll be seeing me lots and lots. I'll try and answer as many of your questions as I can if you see any other.
And the results turned out to be very good. New Zealand did quite well in terms of how many people contracted the virus.
Yes, they did. So she fronted daily press conferences and everybody got very invested. She called it the team of 5 million, and that is sort of what happened. Everybody was there to try and beat the virus. And less than 2,000 people became infected and 25 people died. And by May, and then certainly by June, New Zealand was pretty much back to normal. All the alert levels had dropped. We could go out to bars, we could go to restaurants, you could have weddings, you could have big parties. It was remarkable.
There have been a few recent cases there, though, haven't there?
There have, yes. There's been there's been an Auckland cluster in August, and that was very disappointing because everyone was getting used to normal life again. But again, the action was very swift from the government. They alerted about the case, community cases, on a Tuesday, and by the Wednesday, Auckland was back into lockdown again for 3 weeks. And now they've eradicated that cluster. They've had one more person become infected on a boat, so a foreign boat that came in. But there's no community spread. And again, in Auckland as well, life is essentially back to normal. The big toll, of course, has been a recession. The economy has contracted more than 12%, so more than Australia, but less than the UK. That's obviously what Ardern and her government will be dealing with for the next 3 years.
After several debates and a very long campaign, some of you may still be undecided.
Yeah, so Jacinda Ardern and the Labor Party went to the election with all these crises under the belt and now an economy in recession as well. What was her message for this election?
Well, actually, she's sort of stole her message off the National Party. They're always the party of stability, but this time around, Labor has been the party of stability.
Mm. Some of you may have never voted for Labor before, and my message is for you. Now, every vote for Labor is delivering strong and stable government. And that's what we need right now.
So she said, let's keep going. Let's keep moving. That was the slogan, let's keep moving. We'll look after you. We'll get the economy back on track. But in some ways, it didn't really matter what she said this time around, because New Zealanders had absolutely no appetite for change. Mm. They've had a difficult year. It's been scary. Benefit numbers are up, poverty numbers are up. Ardern has been praised for her handling of the pandemic. And, you know, we can see that in the figures too, that we've managed to contain it. And nobody wanted an election. It was just this tiredness and this weariness. And even the political commentators, they didn't want it. They said, God, let's just get her back in. Let's, you know, keep the ship steady.
Mm.
So Labor, in some ways, it is dangerous as well, but they haven't had to do much except promise to keep doing what they've been doing. And what was very absent this year in this election, there were no promises of transformational change. There were no promises to eradicate child poverty or to, you know, combat climate change. The tone of the speeches and the tone of the language was so much more contained, and it was about steadiness and jobs, free apprenticeships, you know, just helping people tick over, keep going. Suddenly that sort of ambition, that language has gone.
Tēnā tātou katoa. There are 17 days to go. Welcome to the News Hub Decision 2020 Leaders Debate in a COVID-19 election under level 2 restrictions, a bubble.
And people remarked on some scenes that came out of one of the debates about how polite it was.
Okay, great. Summer is sorted then for both of you. What is your favourite native tree that best represents you, Judith Collins?
That would be a kowhai.
Kowhai? Jacinda Ardern?
Hurtikawa.
Would you chain yourself... would you chain yourself to a kowhai or a pahutakawa to protect it?
No, I'll tell you what I would do. I'd plant some.
Okay. And talking about divisiveness was one of the things that Jacinda Ardern addressed during the campaign, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And she doesn't have any appetite really for divisive politics. And she said this multiple times. She doesn't want politics to be a blood sport. She preaches and acts with a politics of kindness.
We are living in an increasingly polarised world, a place where more and more people have lost the ability to see one another's point of view. I hope that this election, New Zealand has shown that this is not who we are, that as a nation, we can listen.
It's very difficult to draw her out on any criticism of, you know, for example, Donald Trump. She's very careful to toe the line there. But it was a very polite campaign, and that is what New Zealand seemed to want and need at the moment. Everybody feels quite fragile. Everybody feels quite tired. No one had the appetite for the sort of drama and scandal that usually accompanies politics. And, you know, they wanted Ardern back, and they wanted that steady hand and that kindness and that warmth. And that's, I think, why we saw such a landslide.
Elections aren't always great at bringing people together, but they also don't need to tear one another apart.
Do you think that that kind of politics can be translated to other countries?
Definitely. And I think even, say the US, for example, Britain and Australia, dare I say, there's stark reminders to New Zealanders that we don't want to go down that route, that it can get very ugly, that it can get very nasty. And it actually, that sort of fighting gets in the way of governing and it gets in the way of getting things done. New Zealanders are very pragmatic. They don't have much of an appetite for drama, and definitely the sorts of scenes we see in the US. I think part of that is that it's a very small country. There's only 5 million people. So there actually is a necessity to get along in some regards, sort of the way that small country towns, everyone has to get along in some way because you've got nowhere else to go.
You said she didn't promise transformational change in this election, but I think there is a sense that people are expecting her to deliver on some of the promises that she made in her first election campaign. Is that right? Are people expecting, you know, her to work on this homelessness and child poverty promises and climate change as well?
Yes, they are. They are. And she did say that some of that transformational change she'd promised would take longer than one term. So now she has the second term. And I think the expectation is she's unshackled now. She's not in a coalition with anyone. There's a majority government. So if they do want to push transformational change, now is the time. They've got the mandate. In terms of child poverty, it seems like the numbers are very slowly starting to decrease, but I think people would like to see more dramatic investment in young children, for example. Even in a basic level, there's a school lunch program that, you know, kids get school lunches, but it's only in a handful of schools. So making that nationwide, for example, would be some move that you'd be hoping to see. Her priority is getting people into work, getting people into free apprenticeships, and resuscitating the economy.
What challenges do you think lay ahead for Jacinda Ardern and the New Zealand Labor Party in this term of government?
I think this is going to be a very difficult time to lead. The effect on the economy is only going to get worse. The borders are still closed here, so that affects a lot of small businesses, that affects tourism. And the longer the borders are closed, the more people are having to go onto the benefit, the more people are suffering in terms of their earning ability. So she's going to have a lot of people that are needing help. And that really stymies other sort of transformational growth or changes when a lot of people are just needing basic help with sort of food packages. And the state housing list is at a record high. So those are the sorts of issues she's going to have to deal with. And they're not the glamorous ones. They're not the ones that are going to be the big wins. There's going to be have to be a lot of money spent on areas that you won't be able to really see but are necessary.
Do you think New Zealand is hopeful her politics of kindness will work this time around?
Oh, I definitely do. I think her politics of kindness do come a little bit from her background. She grew up as a Mormon and she only rejected it in her early 20s. She grew up in a very socially deprived town and she saw children going hungry. She saw children, you know, with no shoes. So from that young age, she was driven to fix some of those social ills she saw. She's not a power monger. She's motivated really by that grassroots sort of politics, which has taken her all the way to the top. When she was elected, she banned ministerial cars and made her and all her ministers travel and carpool by van. And, you know, she took a pay cut and all of her ministers took a pay cut when the recession was announced. She does lead by example. You know, she has some faults, but ego is not one of them. She is not an ego-driven woman or politician. She did not want to be Prime Minister, which perhaps is what makes her the best candidate to be Prime Minister.
Well, he's hoping that other countries can watch and learn. Thanks so much for joining us today, Ellie.
Lovely to talk to you.
That's it for today. Thanks to Eleanor Ainge-Roy for talking to us after an exhausting weekend covering the election. If you liked this episode of Full Story, don't forget to subscribe or leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. This episode was produced by Jake Morecambe, Joe Koning and Ellen Lee Beater. The executive producers are Miles Martignoni and me. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.